Welcome to another episode of the Scripting Dead podcast. Today I have a very special guest with us. She is a Microsoft MVP. She is a Google CDE. She is working at Microsoft doing who knows what with JavaScript. And on top of that, and maybe that's the best part for me, she's Uruguayan. Yes, she is. So Natalia, welcome to the podcast, and please introduce yourself and tell our listeners who are you and what you do.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, I'm from Uruguay, and that's something I'm very, very proud of. I want to make a little correction. I had an MVP award, but now I work at Microsoft, so I
can't. Oh, you can't. That's true.
And I, alumn of the Microsoft Most Valuable Professional program. Yes, and I work at Microsoft. I work in developer experience and tools for JavaScript developers building applications on Azure. So everything that has to do from being in GitHub to VS Code to deploying to Azure. And that's what I do. Basically, I design tools, I code them, I review them, do the research.
That's basically what I'm trying to make our lives easier, essentially, when using my
exactly.
JavaScript.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
A smooth transition from the idea of an application to coding it to deploying it.
All right. Awesome. Parts. Perfect. Thank you. All right. And today you're here to talk about JavaScript fatigue. Let's call it that. I liked your suggestion for the title. Essentially, trying to understand how to stay updated as a JavaScript developer when the JavaScript ecosystem is growing and changing every single day. And there is so much information around from multiple sources. So it can be overwhelming for new developers and, you know, experienced developers as well. How do you know what sources to trust? How do you know which technologies to focus on within the JavaScript system? And, you know, essentially, how do you stay updated and relevant as a JavaScript developer without burning out? So let's talk about that.
I want to mention that whatever I express here is just my opinion. Yeah. So it doesn't need to work for everybody.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't need to be the truth, like the essential truth about anything. It's just how I, or what I've learned from experience over the years and what works for me, and maybe it will work for others in the ecosystem. Or in the JavaScript ecosystem.
That's perfect. That's very valid disclaimer, because not everyone learns the same way. Not everyone absorbs information the same way. That's the same argument when it comes to saying, you know, you're a self-taught developer versus formal education. You know, there is no right answer. So I like that. All right. So let's start at the beginning. How do you, or in your personal experience, what do you do to stay up to date? What's your favorite way of staying up to date with JavaScript?
You know, you just mentioned something very important, and this may influence my answer to that question.
Okay.
Because I don't come from a computer sciences background. I did study computer science later on, mm-hmm. when I was already working as a developer.
Right.
But I studied architecture and fine arts, and then I started working as a developer. Like, I transitioned into the software development world, and I did it through open source. And so I'm one of the early adopters of open source content,
okay.
right? Because I needed to learn things, I needed to train myself, and I'm talking about the early 2000s. So it's not like, not even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And
before open source was cool. Let's put it that way.
Before open source was so mainstream, yeah. as it is today, right? And But it still existed. It
Absolutely.
existed in a different fashion because not even GitHub was a thing back then. But there were forums. I started by learning, like my first experience with ECMAScript was through ActionScript because I was a designer and then I wanted to build Flash websites. And I started by using just the I don't even remember if it was called scenario or stage, and creating graphics and trying to animate them. And then I learned that it wasn't enough if I couldn't code that animation. And so that's how I went from designer
to code it.
Coder to programmer. And there were many sites that were teaching you how to animate things in Flash. And then I wanted to send forms. And I was like, yeah, but to send a form, you need a server and you need to learn PHP. And then, okay, but where do I store those responses or whatever? And you need to use a database.
Yeah.
And then I started learning MySQL. And that was my transition. And all those learnings came from the internet.
Right.
I learned online. But there wasn't so much content available. So there were a few people, and the concept of developer relations, I think, didn't exist back then.
That's too new.
So there were like developers that were working and were sharing their learnings, or professors from the university, or people in the academics world that were, you know, making their research available to others. So I have a long history of learning alone and learning online, and I am very picky with the content I consume.
Okay.
Because of that, because I have very long experience.
Yeah, I can relate to that. You were burned too many times, so you started to pick carefully. Yeah, I can see that.
Exactly. And then I'm also somebody who goes to Stack Overflow very often, not only because I want to go and grab an answer to a problem or a solution to a problem. I want to see the conversations between developers.
Okay.
That's very, very important to understand how people reason about solving a problem. And today, my daughter is starting to be a software engineer, and actually another kind of engineer, but doesn't matter. What I tell her is, do not go for the solution right away. Explore the many different ways to solve a problem. But that probably comes later in life, and I'm overwhelming her a bit. What I can say is, today there is a lot of content available. There are many options. And of course, like you said, the JavaScript ecosystem is super dynamic. Everything changes very fast. You have many framework options, for example.
Yeah.
What's the right option for me? What should I learn? I say, of course, you have to look at the market, what is being demanded from a JavaScript developer. What frameworks are being used the most by companies that are hiring. That's a valid way of finding the right thing to learn. But don't forget the basics. That's very, very important. Because if you learn, let's imagine we have the JavaScript specification as a lower layer of knowledge. And then we have the language and the APIs that are from the platform, like that are native to JavaScript. And then on top, we have the frameworks as an abstraction layer.
Yeah.
And each framework, depending on the paradigms, depending on the programming models that they, I wouldn't say enforce, but they promote, are going to be abstracting those two layers below in different ways.
Absolutely.
And so if you learn one way of doing things, let's imagine you go for functional programming. And then the next day you find yourself having to use object-oriented models, it's going to be a lot more difficult to go from that, from one point to another, if you don't have an understanding of the actual native mechanics of JavaScript. How things work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Agree. Agree. And
so
yeah, go.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Okay. Just a parenthesis there. So I recently released an episode of the podcast talking about, you know, fundamentals versus framework, actually, and the discussion of whether you should start by one or the other. What would be your answer there? Should you focus, you know, say you're starting to learn JavaScript, maybe you're coming from another language, maybe you're not, and you're looking at JavaScript as a new monster, how would you tackle it? Would you go the framework first approach and learn to be marketable, you know, sooner rather than later, or go the basics approach and get the basic layer that you were talking about understood, and then move up and eventually find a job?
Okay, so there is a set of concepts that are very basic, like flow structures and control flow structures and I don't know, types and all these kind of things. You should know that. That's something very basic and fundamental of programming that you should know, regardless of the programming framework you are going to adopt later. And like I said, then maybe you want to look at the market. But why we experience the market and whatever is people being hired for. But what is important is that in the JavaScript ecosystem, we suffer from fatigue because we are very creative, probably. Yep. Everybody's creative, right? But the JavaScript ecosystem is super creative, and we're always experimenting with new ways of doing things. And that gave birth to different frameworks, to different meta frameworks on top of those. And that can be super overwhelming, even for me. I see things every day, new things that come up, and I immediately think, I want to learn that. I want to experiment with that.
Yeah.
But you need to learn to say no to yourself at some point.
There are not enough hours in the day, especially if you want to have a life.
Yeah, there are not enough hours in the day, and also when you are at let's say, I don't know how to say this, more junior stage of your career, when you're trying to evaluate what works for you. If you try to learn everything, you're going to end up not learning anything. And I can say from own experience, when I first learned ActionScript, then I learned some JavaScript. It was ECMAScript 5 at the time.
Yeah.
A little bit of it. And then I immediately went with jQuery. Because jQuery was the thing.
Absolutely.
Yes. At the time.
Yeah, I was there.
And it made everything easier. But then when ECMAScript 6 came to life, it was more difficult for me to understand certain things because I had gone through that adoption of jQuery at a level that my mental model of JavaScript required those abstractions.
Right. Yeah. You were a jQuery developer, not a JavaScript developer.
At that point, I was a jQuery developer. Yeah. Everything was jQuery. So whenever I had to think about, how I do this with JavaScript APIs, it was obviously more difficult for me. When I got this understanding, I was like, let's go back and review all that knowledge, because it's very essential for me to acquire before I learn a different framework. In at that time it was Backbone that I wanted to learn.
Yeah.
And it was not easy by any means. It was had its complexity.
Yeah.
And this is when I got the understanding of, yeah, you need to know the basics before you learn a framework. But that, again, I want to do this important disclaimer. That's how my mind worked.
No, absolutely.
Maybe
yes.
Other people have a different understanding of things.
I agree. Yeah, everyone receiving advice needs to be critical enough to understand if it works for them or not. This is how it worked for you. And I agree 100%. Yeah. If you understand how the language works, then it's going to be easier to like map those mechanics to whatever framework you're trying to pick up. I remember going through Backbone as well and hating it with all my God. I don't think I ever really got it. I think I skipped it into the next one. I don't remember the name of it. But
Ember, maybe?
No, I also skipped Ember. I think I played with Angular. With the first version of Angular?
Oh, Knockout, maybe?
Knockout? Oh, Knockout. Yes, Knockout. Yeah. I remember that one. Yeah. Okay, we're deviating. We're remembering.
Yes.
Yeah. That's probably a
topic. We're getting to things that people say, like, what are they talking about?
Yeah. We're old, people. Yeah, we're old. We've been around for more than 20 years. So, yeah, we've seen things in JavaScript. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right. But going back to the fatigue part of it, we are talking about learning, going through the fundamentals first. That's a healthy approach. So you were saying, like looking at Stack Overflow, looking at the conversations, trying to understand the reasoning behind the answers. I understand going to Stack Overflow if you're looking for a specific answer. You know, you usually Google it and end up in Stack Overflow anyway.
Yeah.
But how do you know, you know, when it comes to being bombarded by all the new frameworks and all the new techniques and all the new paradigms and everything new in the JavaScript world, how do you pick and choose? Okay, because you were saying, you felt like I want to do everything, but you don't have enough time, and you know, you want to keep a healthy life and a balance. So, how do you determine what's worthy of your time and what to just let go and skip?
That's very, very complicated. And again, it goes back to researching the problem you have and what's the best solution, and then how do I learn exactly? Let's imagine you're a person that's just starting in the JavaScript world, and like I said, you want to be hired, then you want to research the market. That's your problem.
Right.
What do I learn? Right? What are the, I don't know, where do I find the most offers for work? Like job postings, what do they require? And that would give you an idea of probably what's the best route for you because you want to be hired. Again, that's your problem to solve the problem at hand. I want to be a hireable person. Then when you already have the specific knowledge to be in the workforce, or some knowledge to be in the workforce, this is when I believe the actual fatigue begins.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the context of building an application, you are going to be facing multiple problems.
Yes.
And they all have multiple solutions.
Correct.
And again, this is an ecosystem that offers many possibilities, many opportunities of there is a library, there is this SDK, there is this other library, there is this package, there is this framework, there is this thing. You want to learn everything. That's. I think that the reasoning is, it's not possible for me to learn everything and to be good at everything.
Right.
Let me find a solution for this specific problem and specialize on it, perhaps. And then that's probably a good indicator of what's the thing you should focus on at the time. And try to block. Try to block a little bit the message, the incoming, the input from from many people that are trying to put content out there. And this is another filter you had to learn to develop. What is the good content, the quality content versus the hype and the, the marketing versus the actual technical good content. Of course, always go to the documentation of whatever you're trying to learn. That's 100% the right source of truth of what you are trying to learn. Sometimes documentation for a framework, a library, is not good.
Yeah.
We have to come to terms with the reality that
absolutely.
Sometimes developers or engineers are very, very good at developing a software,
yeah,
but not so good at documenting it.
Yeah, they suck at writing. Let's say it.
Yeah, some do. Some are really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the reality is that you may need help also to understand some of the concepts, even explained in the documentation. Mm-hmm. And this is where you are going to try to find somebody. That depends on what's your favorite format for content. If it's video, if it's written content. I prefer written content, maybe because of, I don't know, my background, my age, I don't know how I started. But if it's video, it's great. I mean, some people prefer video, and that's okay. There are also very short videos, like TikToks. I think that is not enough, 30 seconds or whatever, 60 seconds, to explain an in-depth technical concept. I also think that these type of content doesn't help with people focusing on whatever they're learning, because it switches so fast and you have so many mixed content in the same timeline or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But it works for younger people. I see my daughter, like she
goes through it. Yeah.
It works for her. She's a fan of that. But whatever, if it's written long videos, short videos, try to learn from people that have solved problems and you can see their solution as a tangible thing.
All right.
Not just content and the explanation of things, but maybe seeing, okay, they actually worked on doesn't need to be an application that is on production and for a huge enterprise, but they have code, right? They have something you can fork and play with and better understand, and it's well commented and will help you also build along. That's an indicator of quality content for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That I can see code.
Yeah. Essentially, you want to see credentials in some form that make sure that lets you know that whoever is teaching you, let's put it that way, knows what they're talking about, so you can filter out if this person doesn't have.
Yeah.
A repo, this person is not showing code, it's just talking about it. They don't have any history of coding or really building anything. Then you probably, let's say, you won't be inclined to take their word for it.
That may also be contradictory because, for example, myself, I had been working as a developer for multiple years, but I was working in enterprise and all the repos and all the code were
private.
Behind credentials, right? They were in Bitbucket, in a private Bitbucket.
Yeah.
And until some point, like if you go back my history of GitHub, you may not find a lot of code, right? So maybe that could deter you. And that's the case for many people. Like they were working for many years in software development, and then one day they decide to start sharing the knowledge they have. So yes, you also need to kind of follow the person, understand what they're working on, what they're working at, how did they acquire a certain opinion about a topic. But in general, people that have been working in software development for a very long time, once they start sharing that knowledge, they start also showing code. Like they put a prototype or proof of concept or whatever on their public repos. So that's the thing. And also one thing that I also try to see from people that promote or teach about a certain technology is how they speak about the cons of the technology.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because absolutely every solution has pros and cons, has trade-offs. And if somebody tells me that their solution doesn't have any trade-offs or doesn't impose any trade-offs or cons or things I should or pitfalls, or then I become very skeptical about it.
Yeah.
That's one of my pet peeves. Like when somebody says, no, this is like
the best,
the goal.
The silver bullet, as I like to call it.
Yeah, this is the silver bullet to everything that you're trying to accomplish. Then it's like, probably not.
Yeah, the spider sense also, start tingling. Yeah, you're not. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also the when I follow people that are teaching about technology that they're building, I also look for people that know, that can say, I don't know. Like, I don't know that. I don't know the question, the answer to that specific question, because I didn't try to solve that specific use case, or I never came across that edge case, or let's investigate together that, because I never did that and I don't know how to answer. So if it's somebody who's like knows everything about everything, that's also not very, it doesn't inspire me trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree. Yeah, you can just say, you know, I don't know, I've never done it, but this is how I would do it. That's perfectly fine. Instead of just skipping the I don't know and say, do this, which could be totally wrong, and you're saying it as if you knew what you were talking about. Yeah,
and that's another case that you see online a lot.
Yes.
When somebody asks, how do I solve a problem with XYZ? And somebody comes and say, oh, don't use XYZ, use this other thing. And you're like, but maybe this person has a requirement to use that. Or absolutely. Maybe they're just trying to learn that. So obviously, adding another dependency.
Exactly. You're not solving the problem. You're just giving them another problem to solve. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So be picky about the sources. That's a very good advice. Learn how to find the ones that work for you. That's another one. Sadly, there is no easy way to advise about that, to show how to do it. It's just whatever works for you, you have to figure it out. Then... would you say, so another aspect of the JavaScript fatigue, I think that social media plays a huge role in fatiguing developers, because we see a lot of people that share their success without sharing their, you know, the road to that place. So it gives the impression of overnight success. And by success, I mean you know, making $100,000 a month or just, you know, releasing a project, whatever success means for you. But the point is, working on your things while also being employed is that other like elephant in the room that gives you an idea of, well, you know, as a developer, if I want to stay up to date, if I want to like be better than my colleagues or shine at my show or whatever, I should also be like doing extra work. I should also be burning the midnight oil, as they say, to create new products, to create my own projects outside of work. What would you say to that? Is it? Do you think it's useful? Do you think it's healthy? Do you think it should be a practice that developers should follow, or where do you stand on that?
Maybe I'm not the best person to ask that because I have burnt out multiple times because of or out of working on side projects together with my regular work mm-hmm. and also having a family. Yeah. And so trying to find a work-life balance while I do many things. But there are things that are part of the nature of people. Like I have this natural tendency of trying to share everything right. I'm building and doing and experimenting and then writing about it. And this is how I wrote about that website that I basically did on my vacation. Like one day I said like, okay, I am always constantly joining podcasts and whatever, whatnot, or being asked online about this specific topic, I want to have a reference right. so I can link people to it. And that's how it happened. And so, of course, if it's in your nature to share and to build stuff, do it. But once it starts, I don't know, affecting your health, affecting your personal relationships, your family life, your personal life, and even your work. Because if you get burnt out, yeah. you cannot be good at what you're doing for a living.
Absolutely.
Then it's better to learn to say no. I cannot do this now. And I want people to understand that there's always a chance tomorrow. The internet will always be there.
Absolutely.
So if you don't feel like, if you feel like taking a sabbatical and not doing anything on the side, just don't. You can do it the next year. Like there is no need for you to expose yourself to burnout or whatever, stress, and even worse, mm-hmm. out of trying to get visibility and validation or success, like you said,
right.
whatever success means to you. I do think that it helps when you are on the search for a job to have public stuff that you can refer hiring managers to, or that you can discuss. I remember being hired by a consultant, a startup back in the day, like more than 10 years ago. And I didn't have a GitHub, like a lot of stuff on GitHub, mm-hmm. but I had websites that I had built,
right.
web platforms. And I remember the interview being about this technical lead going, like opening the sources on the browser and asking me why I had taken that decision, why I had done that, why this was like this. And that was I made a good impression, and right. that's how I got hired, right? So, of course, it helps to have stuff out there that you have authored and that you can talk about. But if it, like, will end up ruining your health, don't do it.
Yeah, it's not worth it. Yeah.
It's really not worth it. You can maybe talk about somebody else's implementation. And if you're confident in that, it works just as well as discussing your own stuff. So
that's fair. That's fair. All right. What about another topic that at least to me it always makes me feel anxious, because I never had time to go to but I always want to, because they seem so fun. Meetups, conventions, conferences. Are they useful to this to solve this fatigue problem, to understand, you know, what's new, what people are working on, what should I be focusing on, or are they just useful for something else?
I think they're very useful in that sense of you can understand, because for example, for me, it never worked to subscribe to a newsletter.
Right. Yeah.
Like many people subscribe, or to an RSS. It's like, oh my God, so much. I collapse.
Yeah.
Right. But maybe I go to a conference and I see what people are working on, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, I'll put it in my to-do list.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think, and one aspect that contributes to knowing where the industry is going and what's important for you to learn is networking, because you can discuss with other people what are they working on in real life, like what is, and that's essential. You need to know exactly what is being used in production, what is being worked on, yeah, and with, and what are those technologies that are emerging, that are immature, that you may want to put in the on hold for later if they actually get traction, and you may want to learn them right later, as opposed to what's going to be useful to you today. And sometimes it's not the most fun stuff what's being used, but it's the most reliable stuff, the most industry proven concept and framework, library, technology that it's out there. And yeah, it all depends on what's your objective at the time. You want to learn what's going to be useful to you at your trade, or you want to learn just to experiment and have fun.
Right.
Then, because you have the time and you want to do it.
Nice. And you mentioned something that is not as easy as it sounds, which is networking. I feel like the developer community is not built, ironically, for networking, in the sense that many developers, and I'm counting myself in that bag, are introverts, and they don't like to go out and have conversations with other people, in the sense that approaching you and say, oh, you know, what are you working on? Tell me about it. I want to know. That's a really difficult barrier to hop over, I feel like. So that's also one of the main reasons why I feel like in my own case, going to a conference, and you know, it's useful in the sense that, you know, all the talks will be interesting for me, and I'll be able to take notes and go back home and learn about those topics. But the networking aspect of it, that's not an easy thing for many of us to achieve, actually.
Absolutely, and I fully agree. I am an ambivert. Like, sometimes I'm very extrovert and I can go to a conference and speak to everybody, and sometimes I am feeling shy, and people may think, oh, she's quiet, she doesn't want to hang out. But it's not that. It's just that I'm tired, right? Yeah. Maybe I'm in my JavaScript fatigue, and my social battery is shorter.
Yeah.
And so you cannot sustain longer conversations and in-depth technical discussions in the hallway track. But there's always this profile. For sure, there is one person in the room, or several, that are the ones that foster that conversation right. to happen. They are the ones that are in a circle of people chatting. So maybe you just, you know, get closer to them.
I like and that. Yeah.
Try to start slowly interacting with people until you feel like you don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's typically in our industry there are different profiles of people, like the more outgoing and extroverts and the more introverts. You just need to, you know, find a group of diverse people and start talking to them. But I do find value in networking for many reasons, not only because it helps you understand what you should pursue in your learning path, but also because you may get a referral, yep. you may get friends that will help you get more visible, even if you have only one project online instead of 25,000. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can discuss that with them, improve them. And that's another thing. That's the best way of learning, obviously, building. So not only just getting the input and not implementing right, anything, right, that, yeah. that's not very helpful, but also having discussions, like pull requests and the discussions over pull requests and how can you do better. That's the best way to learn, in my opinion.
I like that, yeah.
So, but of course, it's also not easy. It requires the same kind of ability to, like some kind of interpersonal skills. Many people are shy
yeah.
to show what they did.
Absolutely.
They don't know how to get constructive feedback. Some people don't know how to give constructive yes. feedback. That's something that maybe as a community we need to work on because it's very important. It's very yeah. important to learn.
Agree. All right. We're way past over time, and I don't want to steal more of your time. So I just want to ask you one last question. What would be the number one advice that you haven't given yet in this episode to anyone going through JavaScript fatigue and trying to make sense of the overflow information out there?
Back off. that's the best advice. When you feel that you are under fatigue, when you can recognize it, mm-hmm. just simply take a break.
Okay.
Take a break, because the JavaScript community, the online community, the technology thing will always be there. And I know that FOMO is real.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know what? When I leave Twitter for a while, I don't interact so much with the tech community, and then I come back, I see exactly the same conversations going on as I did like 1 year ago. So don't worry, you're not going to miss out on anything. People are learning at their own pace. Some people are just acquiring knowledge that you probably got many years ago
yeah.
or that you will get in a few years. And I see that over and over. Some people are speaking like right now about, I don't know, for example, schematics. That's something that I was teaching in 2017 or 18, I don't remember, to other people. And I'm like, oh, it's like a new thing. Maybe I should go grab those courses and I don't know, yeah, refresh yeah. them, because people are interested in this topic again. And so it's a continuous cycle, and many development concepts are recycled. And absolutely. So those new technologies that you see emerging, I don't know, server-side rendering, all these things.
Reactive behavior, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're not new. They're just being refreshed. Yep. They're being optimized, or they're being resuscitated. But they are not new. Like, you are always in time to learn something, and it's always going to be something new.
Yeah.
If it's new for you, it's new, right? So yeah, no rush, no stress.
Awesome. I love that advice. All right. Thank you, Natalia, again.
You're welcome.
For coming in, for all the advice and sharing your own experience. And just share with the listeners where they can find you online if they want to reach out.
Well, it's in Spanish, so I'm going to try to do my best.
I'll have it on the show notes anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, my name everywhere, GitHub, Twitter, LinkedIn, is Amphibia Creativa, and that's because I like water sports a lot. And you can also go to my site, that's microfrontend.dev.
Yeah, if you that's
I speak about I don't speak only about micro frontends, by the way. I speak about
everything.
Front-end
setup in general. But yeah. Definitely, if you're interested in micro frontends, that's a huge learning resource. So absolutely recommend it. All right, that's it. Thank you, Natalia, again, and that's it. Thank you for listening, and catch you on the next one. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was it for this episode of the Scripting Them podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Remember that you can find me online on Twitter at TheDeepMan123. And you can also find the podcast YouTube channel just searching for the Scripting Them on YouTube. Thank you again, and I'll catch you on the next one.